Look up there in the sky. It's a bird, a plane. It's Handsome Boys Comics Hour.
Those boys are so handsome.
One writer.
One artist.
One weekly discussion of comics and nerd culture. I am your host, Robbie Dorman, literature geek and writer.
And I'm your other host, Eric Z. Goodnight, professional artist and illustration nerd.
And we are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more. Eric, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, man. You're using your intimate voice.
Just, you know, I'm just being cozy. Invite people in. Hey, come on in.
How about a hug there?
Come on in. Listen to some comic talk.
I don't know how to. It's too cozy.
Come on, just take a seat. Just sit over there.
No.
Nice.
No. No.
Nice warm armchair.
I'm not going to sit on your warm anything.
It has a heater built into it.
No. I don't care what. I don't want you to heat up my ass. That's just weird.
Hot chocolate dispenser.
Ew. Why would a chair have a hot chocolate dispenser?
Why would it not? It's very important to have hot chocolate in your warm chair.
I think you fell down the stairs and hit your head, didn't you?
I don't remember anything past 3 weeks ago, but...
So clearly, yes.
Maybe there is a suspicious bump right on the top.
That's called your head.
Oh! Gosh. Zinger there.
I know.
Got a zinger.
It's that lump 3 feet above your ass.
Pacha! If only had a drum kit. All right. I think we can go right into checking in. Checking in is a segment where Eric and I talk about what we've been up to during the week.
Okay. That's...
I was going to wait to see if you fill in the gap there. Eric, what have you been up to? What have you been doing?
Other than creating gaps in our podcast, I don't know. I've been reading a delightful book about how the universe will destroy you.
Well, that's good.
Actually,
good to know.
It's just sort of pop physics and science history by someone you might have heard of. His name is, and I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing this correctly, Neil deGrasse Tyson.
He's Canadian. He's a Canadian high schooler.
Yes. Hey.
Hey. Hey. Sorry.
Sorry.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. Yes. It's the gravity from a black hole will turn you into spaghetti. Sorry. No, it's, I actually had a paperback copy, but, I audibled it. And, Neil deGrasse Tyson apparently was too busy to read it himself. So they got some other black guy that sort of sounds like him to read it, and he pronounces things wrong and it bugs me.
It's kind of important in a science book.
He does a very good job for the most part, and he's a good narrator, but, and maybe it's contested how to pronounce it, but, he keeps calling Newton's book Principia. I'm pretty positive it's Principia because Latin has a hard C sound. It's like Cicero is Cicero. That's actually how you're supposed to say it.
Cicero him in his pants?
Yes. I will Cicero him in the pants. Right in his Roman meatballs.
Roman meatballs.
Yeah. Also, I've spent some time with, and it's almost shameful, but I still love it. The first, I don't know, 30 something episodes of, Dragon Ball, not Dragon Ball Z, but Dragon Ball.
Okay.
And I love that crap. Oh my God. It's like right there, sort of on the cusp of right after Toriyama was doing Dr. Slump. So it's got a lot of that Dr. Slump art style. Every character he draws is like short and stubby and kind of adorable. And it's still like, it's interesting because it shows you like what Dragon Ball Z was going to shape up into. And in my opinion, it's the best part of the whole series. I think a lot of people don't know this, but the comics in Japan, there is no division of Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z. It's all one continuous book that just ran for years. But the show is where the division came in. They relaunched it as Dragon Ball Z, you know, after the original show took off, and then they, you know, it sort of shifted focus, I suppose. It's a little bit different.
I've never really understood the Dragon Ball thing. With my limited exposure to it.
I think we should read, probably for book club, maybe like the first three trades of Dragon Ball. It's a lot of fun. I mean, it's more like early Toriyama and less like what it became later, which I also enjoy that, but it's mostly nostalgia. But the early Dragon Ball, I don't know. I think it's delightful and it's fun.
Where did you watch it?
The magical internet. There's no place people can watch it. You just have to buy things, apparently.
No, not on Netflix.
Nope.
Isn't there an anime streaming site somewhere?
Maybe Crunchyroll has it or someone like that. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. I ate 3 donuts for breakfast.
Is that what you're checking in with?
No, I'm checking in with a book and a video game.
Well, to be fair, I think you can check in with donuts.
I could.
You just have to describe their taste and texture to everyone.
I've had a fat kid weekend, but that's not what I'm checking in with. I listened to a book, to be fair, called The Sociopath Next Door by Martha Stout.
I don't want Fat Kid Weekend to be a band.
I'm sure it is already.
I hope so. Well, just by us saying that, it's a band.
It exists. Anytime you say something, it happens.
Fatkidweekend.tumblr.com.
Yeah, Sociopath Next Door is a book about, you know,
Chrysalopolis.
Chrysalopolis. I can't say it.
Sociopathy?
The incorrect way, I guess. I can say it that way.
Sociopathy. I think that's good enough. It communicates the idea.
Yes.
Sociopathy is what you're trying to say?
Yes. 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 That is exactly what I'm trying to say, and I'm unable to say that.
Chrysalopolis picked a peck of pickled peppers.
Look at that nimble tongue.
Yes, I'm a cunning linguist.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
We always got
to go for the obvious joke. Yeah. Tell me about this book before I stop me.
Just getting the sillies out in a book about sociopaths. She's a doctor. She wrote about her experience with people who've experienced that, you know, encounters with sociopaths and how these people kind of live their lives. And, they say roughly 1 in 25 people is a sociopath.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the book isn't necessarily, you know, saying, you know, this is what a sociopath is, but it's someone who has no conscience. You know, like we have this kind of idea of what a sociopath is, and you always think serial killer or like this deranged madman, but it's really just someone who has no conscience, no empathy, no capability of love. Like they spend a lot of the book, which is, I think, some of the most interesting part of it, just defining really what a conscience is. And what empathy is like, because if you ask someone how to define conscience, it would be difficult to define it necessarily, because it's often also shaped by cultural values.
Right.
It's
a pretty squishy concept.
Yeah. Someone in like the early Roman Empire's conscience would be different than our conscience.
It's definitely evolved over time. with society. So I totally get that.
And they kind of frame that discussion by, like, there's she tells these kind of little stories each around a person who is a sociopath and how their life shapes up. And one is this really smart guy who's also very handsome, very, you know, charming. And as a kid, he blows up frogs for fun. Like, he finds firecrackers and blows up frogs because he thinks it's fun. Because it entertains him at the moment.
I want to say that's probably a lot of kids. Is it trying to say that all kids are sociopaths?
It doesn't really talk about that, but I've read other things that say, yes, that a lot of children are.
They do lack empathy. Usually.
Yeah, like, you don't really, it's hard to say, like, identify a true sociopath as a child, because a lot of children are just have those kind of traits when they're, you know, in an early age. You don't really grow into it until you become a teenager, and it's easier to kind of separate it out. But he does that, and they said, well, if he had grown up in, like, a Buddhist society, he might not necessarily, he might still want to do it and might not care about it or think that the frogs have, you know, would be hurt or anything like that. But he might not do it because he's been taught his whole life that no one does that. And so to fit in a different culture, he would not do that. And that's how they kind of shape that kind of the society and conscience thing. Like, yes, a smart sociopath who wants to blend in with the rest of the people would realize that he couldn't do these things and be not, you know, not be arrested or put in some kind of mental facility or something like that. But they also tell the story about there's this guy, and this is true, a gentleman who would go to post offices, steal mass quantities of stamps, and then just wait for the cops, or burn them, or he would destroy them, or he'd do something weird. And then cops would show up, obviously, and whenever the post office opened, he'd just sit there and wait for them and see them, like, react to what happened.
Hmm.
And then get arrested and go to jail. Eventually get out and do it over again. Like, that's what his life was. That's the only thing they can really get any kind of feeling from is, like, manipulating others. But it's a very interesting book. Really makes you think about your feelings and your empathy and love and, like, how a sociopath feels, and it's interesting. The other thing I want to check in with is a game that is all the rage on Steam right now. It is called Divinity: Original Sin. It is a, like, top-down RPG in the style of Baldur's Gate or Neverwinter Nights or Planescape Torment. All those style games. Eric, have you ever played any of those?
No, I'm familiar with Baldur's Gate.
Yeah, I mean, it's in that style where you control a party of four adventurers, and it's like, it's D&D-esque, you know, fantasy mm-hmm. world. Basically, sorcery is strictly regulated, and you're a source hunter trying to hunt down someone who is using magic illegally. But it's, the story is a lot deeper than that when you get into it. It's kind of like, they have rules set up in the game, but they will let you break them. Like, they want you to break the game, kind of. Like, if you give, like, you can have the stats of telekinesis, and if you put all your skills into telekinesis, you can just destroy the game that way. Cause you can just float objects around, and, like, you can talk to animals, or you can kill almost everyone, and you can pretty much still complete the game. Like, they really just give you free rein about in this world. Do what you want. Have fun. It's really well developed, really well written. It's a lot of fun. I'm only like 10, 20 hours in. It's a really long game too. It's very deep. It has lots of stuff to encounter, lots of stuff to explore, and you want to, it's like Fallout where you want to open up, or Skyrim, you open up every chest, try and find things. So it's slower paced, and that's the thing you have to, after playing, like, get used to modern RPGs. And this one's a little, you know, slower paced. Turn-based combat, really heavy on elemental magic. Like, it works a lot like Pokemon almost, where, like, if you're facing someone who has, you know, if they're wet, you can electrify them easier and stuff like simple combos like that. Really plays into that. But it's a lot of fun. I would definitely suggest it. I got it because I heard all the hype online, and I'm quite pleased with my purchase. I will play all the time. So much fun.
I keep buying games and not playing them. As enticing as every bit of that sounds.
I know.
Do I really need to spend, how much did you say it was?
It's $40.
Yeah, so. Goddamn. Do I really need to spend $40 on something that I will not play?
If you're not going to play it right away, don't buy it right now.
Yeah,
I was itching for an RPG, and that's really why. I had plenty of games to play. It's not like I don't have games to play on Steam. Yeah. I just was like, I really, like, I've been playing a lot of, like, lighter shooting games.
Right.
And I wanted something meaty, and this is certainly that. If you want something meaty...
It sounds exactly like the kind of thing that I need. Like, I need, like, another ME2 or something like that.
It's definitely, and I will be playing through this multiple times. And you can do co-op. You can do it with another person. It's pretty interesting. I haven't done that yet, but I want to. It's again, it's slower paced and it has a steep learning curve. I played it through one time, got about 5-10 hours in and went, oh, this character I created, these characters I created are going to be terrible. So I need to start over. But once you already know where everything is and what to do, it goes pretty quickly after you've like, and now that my characters are level 5 or 6, it only has a level 20 cap. Mm-hmm. So far, I think they're going to expand it. They're still releasing new stuff for it. They're probably raise the level cap eventually, but even it's not as you level up slowly. But I'm level 5 or 6. The enemies are getting much easier than they were originally. Like you have to really learn how to fight correctly. You have to use tactics, and it's not like just hey, all the enemies just like fall over for you. But it's $40. It's selling very well, so they're probably not going to drop the price anytime soon. But it certainly satisfies that itch for me for that like heavy RPG game.
Hmm. So are they going to release Divinity Original Sins in addition?
I don't think so. Yes, listeners, you know, there wasn't an issue of Original Sin that came out this week. We did not read it. That gives you a clue to something.
Uh-oh. It gives you a clue that Robbie doesn't like it.
Yeah, but I got tired of it. That's what it tells you. I think that's good enough segue as any.
I think that's maybe so.
I think it's time for the floppiest part of the week, Eric.
Uh-oh.
It's time for Weekly Floppies. Weekly Floppies is part of the show where Eric and I read the week's books and tell you to buy or do not buy them. And, yeah, you know, we generally agree about it, honestly.
I don't agree with Robbie's stupid face.
It's not stupid right now, is it?
Nah, it's still got donut jelly on it.
I didn't eat any jelly donuts.
Yes, but it sits on your mustache and rots and turns to jelly.
God, it's so gross.
Dude, you're the one eating it.
But it was delicious. Those donuts were really good. Donuts are amazing.
Donuts are donuts.
I have a problem.
Hmm?
With donuts.
You have a donut problem.
I do.
Clearly. Really at least good. You're eating them and you're not like putting your dick in the hole or something like that. That would be a real, real problem.
First up, we're going to go into Marvel. We're going back to the well for the Marvel 100th anniversary. X-Men number 1.
Why did you subject us to this?
I was hoping it'd be good.
It, you know, I don't think it was like, it wasn't like bad, but every second I was reading it, I'm like, why the fuck am I reading this? It's like everything these characters are saying is meaningless. The story is meaningless. It doesn't fucking matter.
It is X-Men number 1, written by Robin Firth, art by Jason Masters, colors by James Campbell and Vero Giardini, letters Corey Pettit.
Can I go back to hating on it now that you've counted them in?
Hate on it.
What the hell, man? I mean, if you're going to do like a thought experiment, like version of an X-Men story, why just be like, oh, he's the president. Wouldn't that be weird? This is like such a,
Yeah, Cyclops, Cyclops is the president of the United States. Somehow. I don't understand. This would have been like Malcolm X being elected president.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which, as we know, happened.
As we know.
In some alternate Earth.
Yes. And, there is like interesting things in this.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's not, it shouldn't be, this is meant to be, it's like an issue that has way too much stuff in it.
Yes.
And it is like trying to be funny and clever as mm-hmm. well as like dramatic and impactful and like, look at this stuff, isn't it like hard hitting, dead people, rioters, and Scott like, am I using my power correctly? And all that garbage.
It's, yeah, pretty much anything that happens in this book, you can safely never read it. And, yeah, there's literally almost no point in this book existing. It's just weird and pointless and... In the end, it's all a dream.
And that's what made me the most upset.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, it's a thought experiment in any way. It's a what if comic, honestly.
Yes.
All these are,
clearly, a what if comic.
Why do you need, you don't need to worry about rewriting a what if comic. It doesn't make any sense.
I honestly think, I am just chomping at the bit to see. Like, this is two that have been fucked up. I'm chomping at the bit to read Stoko's.
If Stoko's book is bad, I'm going to cry.
I don't know how it could be bad. Because I think that, of all people, he's going to do it correctly. I mean, there are other people I would think would do it correctly. This is two for two. You know?
Yeah, two for two, do not buy.
Yeah.
Don't buy this.
Absolutely.
It's...
Or buy it and then set it on fire in a, you know, act of protest.
Yeah, I can't in good conscience recommend that book to anyone. Unless you want to see Cyclops with, like, sideburns.
Cyburnclops?
Yeah, I don't think it works.
I'm trying.
I know.
I gave it the old college try.
Yeah, that's Double Do Not Buy, 100th Anniversary Special, number one, X-Men. Next up is Savage Wolverine, number 21. We're jumping back into Savage Wolverine. We touched on him a couple different times.
I'm almost shocked. It's up to 21. It's amazing how time passes.
Yeah, written by John Arcudi, Joe Quinones doing the art, Corey Pettit doing the letters. This is seeing Wolverine... in a World War One story.
With his funny little knee socks.
Yes, you get to see the little, weird.
His doughboy uniform.
The weird uniforms of that time period. And, it's kind of him seeing him and another mutant in this squad in World War One trying to, protect a bridge, basically, capture a bridge. Mm-hmm. And I kind of liked it.
No, I had a good time reading it. No, it's a little bit different than what you expect. I kind of wish it wasn't so much of a Wolverine story.
Yeah.
I wish sort of he was just an element and he wasn't acting so much like Wolverine and you know, I'm going to kill you with claws, bub. Yeah. I wish it was a little bit. I don't know. I wish that aspect was a little bit more muted. Mm-hmm. I wish it would get a little bit deeper into the other characters, but it was still a fun story. Do you know what it reminds me a lot of?
What does it remind you of?
The Dog Company story from Fables.
Okay. I have not read that.
It's basically this, but with, do you know any of the characters from Fables?
Vaguely.
Bigby Wolf is basically you put, I think it's about World War II.
Mm-hmm.
You put in Bigby Wolf in the place of Wolverine. It's a pretty, you know, obvious flip there. They're mm-hmm. like exactly the same fucking character. And you make him fight Frankenstein, who's a Nazi. Nazi Frankenstein.
Okay. Well, there's no Nazi Frankenstein in this.
And it is much to its detriment.
But I like Joe Quinones. I like his art.
No, it was really, it's really nice looking. He actually makes Wolverine look appropriate. It's a little, yeah. He's a little shorty.
Yeah, exactly. And he, that last page is actually effective. Like it's kind of an interesting little, reveal. Mm. And a nice standoff to end the issue, which it's good. I like it.
No, it's a very good book.
Yeah, we keep coming back to these Savage Wolverine stories, and they're
pretty. I agree with you. They're pretty consistently, worth picking up. It's probably a book you could follow pretty much forever and would be good.
Yeah, it's just standalone Wolverine stories with good creators.
Mm-hmm.
Works really well. So I'm a buy Savage Wolverine number 21.
Totes buy.
Totes double buy. Yeah. We got a bonus book this week in Marvel. Bonus book. And surprise, surprise, it's Ms. Marvel number 6. We both read it.
It's an accidental bonus book.
Yeah, we both read it anyway. So we might as well talk about it.
Nah.
And speaking of Wolverine, this book heavily features him. It's written by G. Willow Wilson, art by Jacob Wyatt. New artist. Ian Herring on colors and Joe Caramagna doing the letters. This is seeing Kamala go into the sewers and fight mutant alligators. And she finds Wolverine in a hologram of Thomas Edison, who's a bird.
I mean, clearly.
Yes.
Who would have thought?
Yeah, but I heard she's very excited about teaming up with Wolverine. And I think it works with Wolverine as his, you know, he always mentors these teenage girl superheroes.
It almost, yeah. I mean, and I get that. It, I don't know why it feels so unnatural, but given his history, it does make sense. He is pretty eager to be Daddy Wolverine.
Yeah. I think it's just, you know, it's inherent in his.
Yeah. It really is, and until you said that, it felt really awkward to me. But it really does, given his history as a character, it makes too much sense. That being said, I don't think this is going to. This can't possibly keep going like this.
No, I don't. I expect him to stick around for this story, this little vignette, and then he won't be present in this book in the foreseeable future. But I still enjoyed his presence. In this, he's not, it's funny and light and like, mm-hmm. Wilson really, she really writes him.
Oh yeah.
Writes him well. I really like his presence in this book. He doesn't feel unwelcome to me. And what do you think about the art, Eric?
I assume
Alfani is probably, taking time off so he, he doesn't die.
What a shithead. No, it's good. It's serviceable. Something about the drawing in Wolverine is very awkward, but, it's good. I just really like Adrian, and this is not him.
Yes.
So, it tells the story. He does the characters right. It just isn't quite there.
It's not the same.
No, it's not. But I'm just glad Wilson is still writing it, and it's not like time for a team change or anything. I don't know that anyone else should really handle this but her for at least a couple of years. I think she really needs to establish this character like really solidly.
Yes, but it really further establishes her as, this, she talks about, her fanfic that she had Wolverine and Storm and Space fanfic. And, she makes a D&D reference in the end. It's still very charming and great. I really like this a lot. It's so good. And I assume that Adrian Alfani is just taking a break so that he can do future issues. They probably, you know, that's Marvel's, that's what they tend to do. They'll have their artists do an arc and then they'll have them take a few issues off and be working on future arcs, which I assume what they're doing with this, but I'm a buy.
I can't not buy this. So yeah.
So double buy.
When did Wolverine lose his healing factor?
Like a couple months ago.
I missed that.
We didn't read it. He's about to die too, Eric. So I don't. We'll probably McNiven's drawing that, so we'll probably check in on that book. Wolverine Must Die, or something like that. I think is the name of it. It's coming up in like 2 months or a month from now.
Ugh.
He lost his healing factor. They say he's gonna be dead for a couple of years. I don't know. We'll see. It's McNiven drawing it, so at least it'll look nice.
I don't know that that's really any consolation.
We're going to jump over to DC. Teen Titans, number one.
Did you hear the grunts and heavy sighs? Can you heal it?
Hear it. Yeah, it's written by Will Pfeiffer, art by Kenneth Rockefeller, colors by Dan Brown. He had broken time from writing Da Vinci Code 3 to do some colors. John J. Hale doing letters. This isn't a bad comic book, necessarily. I think there's a lot of things that are good about it. Like, it's a nice, tight, concise story.
Mm-hmm.
It works well in that regard. Like, it's a one-issue story that it looks like it can go, like, there's stuff in it that will work in later on in the series. But there's a lot of problematic things in it to me. Wonder Girl's costume, that is a problem to me.
Explain.
Well, I understand that this is a superhero comic.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that a certain amount of male gaze is inevitable. But she's like a teenage girl and she's wearing like a crop top or whatever. I don't know what you call that.
It's not really a crop top.
What is that?
It's just like a strapless whatever. I don't know.
Yeah,
it doesn't have any shoulders.
It doesn't.
Honestly, dude, that is. I mean, it's certainly showing a lot of cleavage, but.
I don't know. It's just this. It's not just that. It's just the overall tone of this book. It's the Teen Titans, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. And
right.
It's very flippant about death. Like, oh, they throw someone out of the back of a bus.
Mm-hmm.
Or they throw someone into a building. Oh, he's probably fine. Or stuff like that.
He may or may not be dead. Whatever.
Yeah,
I get that. It didn't really, for some reason, normally that stuff does really upset me. I don't know why, I just sort of railroaded over it. I think her costume could honestly be a whole hell of a lot sluttier. I think that that's relatively reserved, considering. I mean, Supergirl is like a teenage girl, and like every fucking piece of fan art is like of her in a skirt, like spread eagle over, like, you know, like the camera looking right at you. I don't know. It feels like an almost normal superhero outfit to me. Just like a little low cut. I don't know. Superheroes are like basically exhibitionists anyway. I think there's a lot of things that you can criticize about it, but just sort of given the tradition of the thing, I am less bothered by her costume.
Well, and it's just that this book is it's like a Teen Titans book.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need that. Oh, he might be dead. Like, people should care if people die. Like, it's
right.
I don't care if it is a criminal. Like,
oh yeah, no, and it feels, I did sort of feel that moment where, like, they're trying to, like, save these kids, but they just come right in and just kill somebody. It doesn't exactly work.
No, and the story moves really well, the dialogue isn't bad.
Yeah, yeah.
It feels natural, which is, I think, the best, what dialogue should feel like. There's been complaints about the art online.
I don't see that.
It feels
perfectly serviceable to me.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just sort of because it's a little bit different than a typical DC artist.
Well, I don't have a problem with that. No, that was not the issue. I think it's just kind of the, I don't know.
What were they saying?
It was static, posed.
It definitely feels posed. I mean, I understand that completely. So many comic books are exactly that.
Yeah.
So many comic artists are about drawing people in poses. That's kind of a tough thing. You know, it takes a lot of evolution to get past that.
But it doesn't bother me. And I really like the art, actually, honestly.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it works pretty well.
I don't know if I would say I'm a buy for now. There's problematic things in it for me, but I still think it's a good comic. Like, it tells a good story. Mm-hmm. It's a good first issue, even though this book, they're just rebooting it.
It really is kind of retarded. I mean, the last one was awful, so it's probably a good thing.
Yes.
That they're rebooting it, but it's
I agree.
Ugh. Yeah.
This is much better than the last Teen Titans book we read, so.
Oh my god. Oh my god, yeah.
Much better. But I'm a buy for now. We might come back to this and see how it goes. See if the story progresses and stuff.
I think it's worth exploring more. I don't know. I honestly don't know how I feel about it. I am an extraordinarily cautious buy, if anything.
Okay. So that's a soft double buy.
Yeah. What did you think about the scene at the end where the guy was apparently about to say a slur?
Oh, yes.
That they couldn't print.
And Bunker goes, you know, stops him. Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting. I think that it's a part of this book, like, trying to, like, well, you look at the cover and it has, like, a fake Twitter thing on it.
Yes.
I think, and with all the people are taking pictures of them with their cell phones and all that.
Yes.
I think that they're trying to probably add that influence into this book.
And no, they're clearly, I mean, that's what I'm trying to say. I think it's pandering.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, it's, I would rather them be pandering than just be flat out,
offensive.
Maybe, I don't know if offensive is the right word. I mean, I would rather
ignorant?
Them. Yeah. I would rather them have this Bunker character be like, just like wagging his finger, like, it's okay to be gay, you know, at the end of this book, instead of them just saying, oh, Batwoman can't get married. Fuck you.
Yes.
I think that being inclusive in a clunky, stupid way is better than just being flat out exclusive.
Yes, I agree with you. And that's pretty much how I want to see. I'm assuming that they're going to try and include this on, like, this social media kind of, this people are always watching aspect in the future, in this book in the future. And that could be really bad, or it could be fine. We'll see. Some books execute that, and some books do it really poorly.
Yeah.
So we'll have to, you know, keep an eye on it.
It's interesting that DC is late to the table here.
Yes.
In trying to update, you know, whatever, become more socially conscious, which people have been begging for years.
So with positivity now out of the way, we can get to Robin Rises Omega number one. Written by Peter J. Tomasi, pencils by Andy Kubert, Jonathan Glapion on inks, Brad Anderson doing colors, and Nick J. Napolitano doing the letters.
This is a lot of sighing in this podcast.
It is. This book starts with 9 pages of recap telling Batman and Ra's al Ghul and Talia al Ghul and the history of Damian Wayne, including a lot of stuff that I don't. It's like a gigantic recap page, which is, I mean,
yeah, it's ridiculous.
I think they
heard you bitching about how there's no recap pages.
So this, like, one,
we'll put them all in this book.
We'll just do an entire book of it's a quarter of the book.
Yeah, it is.
And then we get whatever his name. What's that guy's name again? Glorious Godfrey.
Glorious Godfrey.
Apocalypse.
What a,
So he's come for some shard of some crystal that's in a coffin, and then we get Ra's al Ghul and Batman teaming up for the moment to fight him all and all those dudes.
from Apocalypse, and there's this, the rest of this whole thing is full of Ra's al Ghul shouting no mercy, and Frankenstein shouting for his sword, and Batman and him tossing swords back and forth. Batman saying things like, "Let's see if you can fly blind," after he stabs some guy in the eye.
Yeah, this is a book who think, for people who think that a good comic has a lot of people in it. They're like, oh, this one's got Wonder Woman and Batman and Shazam and Ra's al Ghul and Frankenstein no, that doesn't, it's not improving it.
Yeah, and the Justice League shows up at the end. We got Shazam saving Batman and Lex Luthor blasting people and Aquaman bringing killer whales out of the ice.
I mean, of course. What else are you going to do if you're Aquaman?
I don't know.
I totally forgot about that.
Yeah, and then Batman just hitting Shazam in the face because he's stupid.
Well, that's good. I approve of that. He keeps punching him in the face.
I mean, you're so dumb. Why are you so dumb?
Oh, my God. He fucking punches Lex Luthor in the face, too.
Yeah, he hits
so
Luthor.
So fucking, God almighty, this book's awful.
The last age, I'm going to Apocalypse and bringing back Robin. Alive!
Now, the fucking last issue of this story in whatever last stupid ass Batman book in this arc, wasn't he like just bitching about how it's wrong to resurrect him?
Yes.
And now he's like, I'm gonna bring him back alive! All of a sudden I've completely changed my mind!
Hitting Shazam in the face a few times.
Yeah. Fucking god damn it.
And yeah, Ra's al Ghul disappears conveniently.
Yeah.
So
if you like books that are terrible and stupid, make me want to smash my head with a brick, then this is a book for you. Because this book makes me want to smash my head with a fucking brick.
I like the art in it, but
I like how Batman's fucking hand looks like. I don't even know what the fuck is going on with his hand in that last panel. I'm trying like hell to figure it out. I think they could have tried to pencil that a couple more times.
He's pointing. He's got the Rick Grimes hand going on.
He must.
I don't know.
It's fucked, which bugs me because it's not particularly terrible throughout this book,
mm-hmm.
But whatever. This
it's still not good. I'm not saying it's fine, but the story's so bad that it doesn't matter. It's just ridiculous.
This book is like almost the Plan 9 from Outer Space of Batman stories. It's not good. There's all kinds of not good.
None of this is not. You don't need to read this. Don't read this book. Do not buy this book. Do not buy Robin Rises Omega number 1. This is a title. Why is it Robin Rises Omega?
Because Omega.
Because it's Apocalypse.
Because cool. Because Omega. Because
it's Apocalypse. We have to throw in Omega. I don't. Whatever. Stupid.
No,
don't,
it's cool.
Don't it's buy cool. This. You're an idiot. I hate
it's
you.
It's totally got like Batman's in it, and like glorious God.
Do an entire show like that.
Yeah.
Man, this book is awesome. Batman chops off his like goblin's arms. It's holding his coffin and it falls. So cool.
Oh man. That sounds great.
Rachel goes stabs a guy in the head.
Jesus.
Don't buy this. Don't
God
double
damn.
Don't buy. Don't buy that, please.
As our exasperated screams don't say enough.
Yes.
Just don't do it, man.
And it costs $5. That book costs $5.
That's shameful.
It's ridiculous. 40 pages of garbage. 9 pages of recap. Hey, remember that time when Damien was killed by a giant Master Blaster baby? Like, freaking Mad Max Thunderdome?
Okay. What the hell? Why do you have to remind me of that? I don't want to recap. I was getting angry, like, reading that. I'm like, I had to read this shit. Fucking Grant Morrison. You're the reason this is bad.
We're going to move over to our indie book of the week. We're reading Rat Queens, number 7, written by Curtis J. Weeb, art, colors, cover by Rock Upchurch, Ed Brisson doing letters. Here we go. Rat Queens 7. Eric, what do you think about it?
You know, I have not kept up this book, so I have no fucking clue what's going on. This book is so fucking delightful that it doesn't matter. I don't have a damned clue what's going on. It's fucking great. It's like, I don't know. It's so good. I just need to pick up a copy of the first trade. This is 7, right?
Yeah, this is the first 5 issues are in, I think, in.
I was going to say, this is a weird ass place to start a new arc. So it's 5 and then
six.
One before,
yeah, 6 is the second arc.
Okay, well, hell, I don't need to pick up the trade. I own 1 through 4 and probably just haven't read them.
Just need to write 5 and 6. You'll be fine.
I apparently. That is how numbers work.
Yes. But, the group is kind of undergoing this kind of weird, dynamic right now where you're actually not really following them for most of this issue. Town guard, the head guard guy is being tortured by the dude with the creepy mask. Creepy mask dude. Kind of tracing why this whole town is kind of falling apart and there's tentacle gods reaching down from the sky to eat people.
I mean, really any good story should end that way.
Yes. I read this book consistently and it's consistently amazing.
It's fucking dynamite for sure. And I have to say, that is the most disturbing fucking like first page I've ever seen. Oh my God.
But the woman with the face
that's
mouth
cursed,
eyes.
And she's got like some kind of eldritch god growing in her eye holes.
Mm-hmm.
That is the fucking, like, I keep zooming in on it and just staring at it and being like, oh my fucking God. And then I like come back to it and I stare at it again.
What about
fucking horrifying.
What about the peppermint lady?
It just delights me.
Okay, that doesn't bother you, but that.
Why would it bother me?
It's just weird.
It is weird, but it's not. It's not Cthulhu's butthole like growing out of someone's eye socket.
That's true.
I mean, that's disturbing as hell.
Yeah, really excellent fight scene in this as well. The art's great.
No, it's delightful.
It's really good.
There's really nothing that's. There's really hardly anything bad about this. Who is this lesbian Bruce Lee?
That's part of, you don't really know.
Okay. Much. I was wondering if it's something that I missed. But.
No, that's part of the, I think that's just some of the thing that's not really totally covered. You're learning about that that's going to be covered in this arc. You don't really get much exposure to it beforehand. So.
Oh, fair enough.
But yeah, she's awesome.
it's pretty good.
Just murders a whole bunch of guys. If I couldn't figure it out, bye. If you're not already buy Rat Queens, go buy it.
It's a pretty excited buy.
Yeah, double buy. Double buy Rat Queen 7. So good.
It's got lesbian Bruce Lee in it.
To be fair, we don't know if she's a lesbian.
And well, it's okay. That's how you describe something.
Okay. You say so. this week, I also read Elektra and Magneto. Both are cool. Should read those books. I could go on, but they're cool. They're cool books. Well,
I'm sick of listening to you talk, so I think you should stop.
Okay.
Why don't you talk about why you don't think it's a big deal? Because I thought what you said was interesting. I have serious problems with the new Thor book.
Okay.
I don't particularly want to vocalize them anymore. I do think that it doesn't make sense to me at all. but it's not exactly, they're not exactly waving a wand and turning
Thor,
into a woman.
No, it's a different person. Yeah. And that is not like just a spur of the moment thing. If you read Thor God of Thunder and Uncanny Avengers for that matter, he has consistently been making mistake after mistake after mistake and costing people things, especially in this last arc of Thor God of Thunder. Broxton, Oklahoma been destroyed.
Right.
And he tries to make amends for it as much as he can, but you see that, like, the thing with his axe that resulted in all the events of Uncanny Avengers, like, his actions have consistently, it's a story of, you know, falling, whoever shall be worthy, you know, blah, blah, blah. And that's the thing. Thor is being unworthy, and that's a big storyline that he's going to go through. So, and it's a big, I guess it is a big deal. You know, one of their main staple characters is now going to be a female character, which is, I guess it's not a big deal to me because that doesn't really bother me. I'm sure it's going to be written by Jason Aaron. He's been writing, this Thor God of Thunder book has been great. Consistently great.
I can't imagine it really being handled badly. I mean, it was fucking Esad Ribic that did those designs, you know, which I do think it's really stupid that, like, people that in my Twitter feed that know nothing about comics and would never comment about this sort of thing normally, they're like putting their snoot at me like, well, that armor doesn't make sense.
She doesn't need armor. Thor can walk around naked. Yeah. It'd be fine. He's a god. Whatever. It's superhero book. You're allowed to not have armor that's natural. Thor walks around with bare arms. You would not have bare arms in combat. But no, it's not going to stay that way.
No, clearly.
Whatever happens, Thor will be Thor again eventually. It may not be in a year, maybe 2 years or 3 years down the line.
This is pretty much exactly how I feel about it. I'm going to give it about 2 years. It's going to be perfectly exactly the way it was.
It's about the story. That's what I care about. That is the nature of comic books, especially superhero comic books in Marvel and DC, that things return to status quo eventually. And that is something you have to accept if you're going to read these books on a consistent basis. It is how they handle the stories, and if they're done well, is what matters. If it ends up telling a good story about Thor's fall from grace and redemption, then I'm all for it. For a new character who becomes Thor, who hopefully will stick around, and in some way, I'm all for that too, as long as it tells a good story in the meantime. And that's why I'm happy that there's going to be more representation of women in superhero comics. I think we no bones about it. We're very pro that. We talk about that all the time on this podcast.
I know my comment the day that the story broke is that it does feel like a gimmick. Like, it made sense with Kate Bishop for her to be called Hawkeye. It makes no sense for another person to be fucking called Thor. Thor's not a title.
I think that's what they're trying to swing it. Like, they're trying to swing. I don't know how they're going to handle it. I'm reserving judgment. That's it.
I have already made my judgment.
I'm going to read it when the comic book comes out.
I'm going to read it too. I am excited to read it for all the reasons said. When I got in an argument with Donnie Coates on Twitter, my comment to him was, I want to see more Kamala Khans and less gimmicks, and to an extent, making a decision to make it this. This feels like it's making a statement that I don't know that anyone particularly wanted, but whatever. I think it's going to be, it will probably be a very interesting story.
If the story is good enough.
Yeah, fuck it. Who cares?
Yes. The gimmick thing will disappear.
The proof is in the pudding.
Precisely.
This is a team that I believe in.
And the same thing with the other thing is in the news is the Falcon. taking over as Captain America. It's the same thing. I like the character of Sam Wilson. I think the Falcon's a cool character, and him as Captain America makes sense. He's been Cap's freaking partner, unofficial partner for 30 years. Him taking up the mantle as Cap is fine. And I'm sure there'll be interesting stories. I don't expect him to stay Captain America. I expected that eventually Steve Rogers will be Captain America again.
Yeah, it really does not seem like that's going to stick.
But again, it's how the stories are. If the stories are good, then I'm fine with it. If the stories are not good, then I'm not, you know, whatever. It was a gimmick. And that's kind of how it works out. Either way, they're trying something. I don't know if it's...
No, it's good to be gutsy. You know, I just don't particularly want them to touch Thor. I don't know, man. It feels like a sacred space to me. I don't want it to be done. But whatever.
Yeah. Well, we will see.
We will.
And now, I think Weekly Floppies is over. Oh, wait. I do want to talk about one thing before.
Uh-oh.
I wish we had thought of this, or at least discussed the possibility of it. You remember that book we read last week, Eric? The book we hated called New Suicide Squad number 1?
Uh-huh.
On another podcast, give full credit, War Rocket Ajax, Chris Sims floated this idea. He's a very good comics writer for Comics Alliance. He loved this book because he posited that this was a parody of DC editorial. This entire book is purposefully parodying, satirizing DC editorial. And if you look at it that way.
So this is, I mean, like the whole conversations that they're having, it's like, well, you got all these people on the same team and blah, 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 blah. And this is all just sort of meta.
Yes, that's what he was saying.
That does really enhance it, doesn't it?
It makes it interesting.
It really does. And it makes perfect sense. And it also, I think, it explains a lot why all the characters are like, oh, blah, blah, Deadshot, blah, 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 you know.
And why am I here?
Exactly.
And I don't know if... The problem is, I don't know if those people were smart enough to actually be doing it that way. It might be giving the writer and artist too much credit. I don't know. And I don't know
if... It feels like a really natural fit to me, and I think that the editors might have just not caught that.
It makes me want to read the next couple issues to see if it goes further direction or not. But I just wanted to mention it and see what you thought about it. Because I thought that was pretty interesting.
I'm fascinated by it. That does enhance it a little bit. Still don't buy it.
No, still don't buy that book. It's still pretty bad. Okay, we're gonna get out of weekly floppies. Floppies part of the week is now over. Till next week.
It was an extended floppy this time.
Extended floppy. We're gonna move over to Nerd Boy Book Club. Nerd Boy Book Club is part of a show where Eric and I will assign, like a book club, signs for something for you guys to read, and we'll read it all together, and we'll talk about it. We are doing a gigantic retrospective of The Walking Dead. We are on our second portion of it, reading volumes 5 through 8, which concern mostly their interactions with the governor, who's a kind of this infamous figure in the history of this book. Every time I come back to this portion, I'm like, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, wow.
This is really dark. Really dark, really bloody, violent.
It's fucking intense is what it is.
Yes, it is. This sees them encounter the governor for the first time, who is that's basically leader of this city that's nearby, near their prison, the prison that they've kind of colonized. And he is a lunatic who runs this city and keeps the people safe, and that's why they let him rule, basically. But he basically, has gladiator fights with zombies around and chops up people, strangers, and feeds them to his zombie daughter, who he also, has a pseudo-sexual relationship with. You're not really clear on that, how far it goes, at least, but that's, it's there.
It's icky.
It's icky. There are several...
It goes all the way to icky.
Yeah, there are several scenes of very intense torture, which are awful. They're supposed to be, obviously, but they're still there.
I thought they were lovely.
There's maimings. Maimings aplenty.
Good lord, yes, there are maimings aplenty.
What did you think about this, Erica? Give me your general thoughts. I guess we can delve into it that way.
I am very glad this really shook things up. I really felt by the end of the last book that it was just going to be a lot of the same monotony over and over. And mm-hmm. This was a very radical shift, a clear shift going from, it was becoming terribly monotonous that it's just, well, oh, there's zombies and we're going to meet a new person and then a new thing is going to happen. And mm-hmm. then the person's going to die. But it really does seem to shift thematically that this is just bringing out the worst in all people, that this whole society is reverting to something just more terrifying and savage, that he's putting on these fights to sort of tone down people's like terrible nature and give them something to distract themselves with. And, mm-hmm. you know, they, that it just sort of inspires this whole all out war between the two of them. A very different sort of story compared to what we had been getting.
Yes. They find out that the governor takes prisoner Glenn, Rick, and Michonne, chops off Rick's hand.
Yep.
So he does not have a hand anymore. It's not magic back on at any time. He's handless. He has one hand. Michonne is tortured and raped. Glenn, I guess they just kind of intimidate until he spills the beans about the prison.
I think that was the plot point is, he never actually said anything.
Right.
They were planning on,
following him back.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They just sort of figured it out because they were wearing prison uniforms.
Yeah. It's not that complicated.
It's,
there's a big prison very close by.
Yeah. It doesn't take some kind of brain genius to figure all that out.
No, they had a mole sent with them to the prison who ends up getting killed by Rick, who he has no feelings of remorse towards at all, which he's a little bit upset about. Mm. Lori gives birth to their baby, a baby girl. Yeah, Michonne, you know, eventually gets revenge on the governor to some extent, tortures him back, chops off his arm and puts out his eye, and it's also a very grisly scene.
It's pretty fucked is what it is.
Yeah. And
not that you're like, oh, poor guy.
No, you're just like,
you're like, wow, this scumbag's really fucking getting it.
Yeah. That's very bad. And they get back to the prison, which has then been which I think was really interesting, moment where they get back to the prison and there's zombies everywhere again.
Yeah, that was, I don't know, my heart sank a little bit. I was like, holy shit.
But they kind of reclaim it for the most part. But then the governor rolls up in a tank with the entire town in his back with guns. And they just kind of, like Eric said, war. Mm. And a lot of people die. Including Lori and the baby. And the governor. And Tyrese. Tyrese's head is chopped off.
Old Tyrese. Man, it was gruesome, too. They didn't...
Yeah.
It wasn't...
Not one clean swipe. It was chop, 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 chop.
Like he was using the back of the fucking sword.
This book goes through these periods of this, where they build up their party, and then something traumatic happens, and people get whittled out. And end of the last arc, the eighth volume, is... Rick and Carl just in the woods by themselves, running away from the prison after the fences have been destroyed. Lori and the baby killed, and everybody running for their lives. Governor's dead, shot by one of his own people. This is what, when I was reading this the first time, this is really established. Like, they even say it in some of like the promos for this, no one is safe.
Mm.
No one is safe. There are very few characters that in this book that you can know that they'll be around the next issue for sure. Anyone can die at almost any time. A lot of times they seem to get around that by maiming people. Like, Rick didn't die.
Well, he got his hand. He destroyed his hand first, and then.
He did.
Then he's like, ah, fuck it. We might as well just lose the whole thing.
Yeah, the governor chops off his hand to make sure that he knows he's being serious, quote unquote. But, I don't know. It's challenging the characters in a different way, which is interesting. And more difficult than just killing them. Like, someone's dead, they're dead. But if they're, you know, you have to write them being disabled in this harsh world. It's interesting.
It's rough business. It's almost completely not about zombies.
No, it's, I mean, they're there and they're yeah. in danger. But it, like I said, it's like them in the desert or
exactly.
Like
it's Dune. Zombie Dune.
Zombie Dune. They're, I mean, you have to watch out for the zombies. And yes, they're dangerous and they can hurt you, but. I think that's another thing that it's kind of been oversaturated in the zombie genre is that it's the people you have to worry about. But the problem is that there's so many zombie stories out there that do the same thing. This is done very well and it's the most successful, but you play Dead Rising. I don't know if you ever played those games.
Mm-mm.
They're good. Capcom zombie games. Open world, kind of in a mall. First one's set in a mall. I think the second one's set in a mall too, but it's a different, I can't remember. But it's just, you know, you're dealing with the worst things are the psychos you encounter. And it's almost like farcical in that game. But in this, it's the same thing. Like, it's the people you find that are most dangerous. The zombies are predictable. The people are not. At one point, Rick asks Lori, like, for killing these people and not caring, does that make him evil? That he would kill everyone to protect them. Does that make him evil? And she says, I don't know. And he says, I don't either. I think that this is that's the entire thing about this book is
yeah.
that gray area that just expanding the morality.
If not, if not for just this segment, it's certainly the thesis, or if not for the entire story, it's certainly the thesis for this segment.
Yes, because they are encountering a guy who is, like, he's the worst, worst thing. He's a guy who has power, who has, like, if he has ethics or morality, it's
he's pretty much the evolution of that. That
yeah.
It shows him and how he cares pretty desperately for the people that are under his care, you know, that he's so sweet. Like it's the scene, he basically goes, he just walks away from just raping the shit out of Michonne just because she's an outsider and he's doing it to torture her,
yeah.
I guess to extract information or
well, she
whatever.
Bit off his ear.
Of course.
And yes. She bit off his ear.
Some degree
and she,
of revenge
and
in there.
She
sure.
is an outsider as well. He doesn't care about her.
No, clearly. But just walks down the street, talks to, you know, a mom and her kids, and, like, talks to a vagrant who's, like, drunk and on the street, and he's like, well, you need to take care of yourself and do all these things. And then immediately goes home and feeds a bucket of, like, human slop to a zombie. I guess it's his daughter.
I think it's implied that's his daughter.
It is,
multiple
yeah.
times, but it's never.
We'll never know for a yeah. fact, and it doesn't really matter. No. Whatever it is, it's just, it's weird and creepy.
Yes.
And it's, yeah.
And then his fish tank's full of zombie heads.
His fish tank's full of zombie. Is it, are you saying zombie heads, or I thought it was just people heads?
No, they're zombies. They're zombies' heads. They're still alive. I mean, they're zombies. The heads are still alive as zombies.
I did not get that. I thought it was just like the heads of people that, you know, his enemies. I didn't know what was going on.
I thought that's what it meant. Like, they were like, it was entertainment. They'd like move around and thrash in the water because they're not dead.
Either way, it's a super not normal thing to do.
Either way, it's a super not normal thing. Yes, he shows like this, he's loving towards the people in his care and then completely like cold. He does not care. He'll do anything to anyone else. Doesn't care. And it's the logical progression of Rick.
Mm. Yeah.
If he goes far enough in one way, yeah, I'll do anything to protect these people, but anyone else, I don't, yeah, we'll do whatever. Him. It's easy to say that. I think it's interesting that you get an issue. You get the issue that ends with the tank rolling up on the prison. And then the next issue is not their encounter. The next issue follows the governor from when we left him after Michonne left him for dead.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where they do roll up. You get it from his perspective. I think that's interesting because it puts a little, like the old line, you know, everyone's a hero of their own story. It kind of shows it from his perspective. And I don't think it's necessarily so, hey, he's a hero or you're supposed to like this guy because you aren't, but it's supposed to show that, yeah, this is a person. And this is not just like,
well, it makes him a much more fleshed out character for sure.
Yes. Yeah.
He's not, I always want to say something like he's not Darth Vader, but I mean, you know, Darth Vader's sympathetic. He's not
Duke Dastardly.
There you go. Snidely Whiplash.
Snidely Whiplash.
It was not exactly where I was going to go, but it works for me.
He's not a mustache twirling. He's like,
yeah, he does have a mustache.
He does have a mustache, to be fair. We left this eighth volume ends with the prison just destroyed and Rick and Carl on their own.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see in the following four volumes them kind of try and regroup and try and we'll pick up the pieces of what's left of the prison settlement, as you want to call it that. Anything else you want to touch on there? Trying to think of
not really. This held my interest. I would say much more than the first couple of books. The art is much improved over the first. The Adler art, I would say, is much improved over his the way he was in the beginning. Getting out the sort of tools in his kit, you know, in terms of there's not like necessarily a lot of stippling or line work or any of that stuff, but it still feels a lot fuller. You know, they're doing, I'm going to say that, you know, there's some digital like graying out of lines and everything feels a lot fuller and more atmospheric. It's greatly superior to what it was in the first three stories that he did with them. It reads so much cleaner and better and works. Yeah. These four books work so much better than the last four.
I think that wraps us up.
I feel pretty wrapped.
But next week we'll be doing volumes 9-12, Walking Dead, getting some more nitty gritty. See what Eric thinks about that. And I think that will bring us to a close. Sad trombone.
Closing it up with sad trombones.
Closing it up. We are the Hanson Boys Comics Hour. You can find us at HansonBoysComicsHour.com. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter at HBC Hour. You can find us on iTunes. Please leave us a good review. Subscribe to us. It really helps us out. We really appreciate it. If you like the show, please do that. If we ask for one thing, that would be it. You can reach me on Twitter at MixmasterSerial. Eric, where can they find you online?
You can see my portfolio by going to freewillunlimited.com. And you can see most of the other things I get up to online by going to ericzgoodnight.com. You can tweet right at me. My Twitter handle is Mr. Bad Example, spelled MR Bad Example.
And with that, folks, that'll be it. Have a good one.
Rock and roll.